is 50 years old. Beatlemania was just beginning in America, and next February will mark the 50th anniversary of the Beatles coming to America and making it big time on the Ed Sullivan Show. February 9th, 1964 was their American debut. After that, they went on tour, and while they were on tour, some young reporters got a chance to hang with the boys everywhere they went, and my next guest is one of those reporters. He was with them everywhere they went in 1964 and 1965 throughout America, and has written about traveling with them on tour in a book called Ticket to Ride. He followed that up with a John Lennon biography called Lennon Revealed, and now he has a new Beatles book called When They Were Boys, in which he looks back on the 7 years leading up to their appearance here in America back in 1964. His name is Larry Kane, and it's always a pleasure talking to him. Hi, Larry. Welcome back to the show.
Oh, it's a pleasure. What's cooking?
I love this book, and Claire Kellett is here with me in the studio.
Hi, Claire.
And, hello.
And she's loving it, too, particularly the picture on the cover of the four of them looking so young.
So innocent, we should also add it.
I would never call them innocent.
Well, let's get...
I think from 15 they were not innocent.
Let's get right to that, because this is the pre-Beatlemania Beatles that you write about in this book.
Well, it's partially Beatlemania from mid-1962. To the end of 1963, because that was the Beatlemania in England, which led up to their dramatic entrance in the United States. And this is a book that would, you could call it more vicious than Inside Politics in Washington, in terms of the treachery and debauchery and betrayal, and also more glorious than any success story you've ever seen. So it's a story of how they really got started. The people left behind, there are about 20 of them still living in Liverpool, who made them what they are, and unfortunately the door was closed on them after the Beatles left. People who rigged a poll for a newspaper. People who gave them their first start when nobody would, when they were painting bathrooms and cleaning bathrooms in a coffee house. The Hamburg nights and days. The nights were much more interesting than the days. The crimes they were accused of, which they didn't commit at all except for one. All the drama, and I know that, Paul, you read part of it, or most of it. It's a pretty dramatic story, and this is not what I would call, although the research is scholarly, this is not a textbook.
No, not at all. It's full of great stories, and I've read the whole thing, and Claire was using the word innocent there, and you immediately said, oh, no, not so innocent.
Well,
you know what? Here's what I want you to do, Larry, because you and I have talked about these kind of stories before, but Claire and many of our listeners may not have heard some of these stories, particularly of these young boys in leather jackets in Hamburg. Tell something from Hamburg.
Well, I'll tell you a lot about Hamburg. Hamburg was a great music city. And they had some extraordinary experiences there. First of all, they met up with a man who became a convicted killer. His name is Torst Fosher. He was a champion, I believe, lightweight to welterweight boxer in Hamburg. And one night, unfortunately, he had a fight over a girl. Aren't most of them that in life, and or the other way around. And he knocked this sailor down, and the guy became unconscious and died in the boat overnight, all over a girl. He went to prison. The Beatles visited him there. And in their first years, when they were being followed by bat-wielding goons from nightclubs, he protected them. He was their protector. And he loved them, still does to this day. They slept in a place called the Bambo Kino, which was an art film movie house. In those days, art films were anything sort of R-rated today. And their life was not R-rated. They lived next to a bathroom, which was horrible for them. They spent late nights and early mornings with women who did not work in normal jobs for a living, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
They had a manager named Alan Williams. Alan was a wonderful man. He's 83 years old, still going strong, and he was called himself the Pox Doctor. He would carry a bag around with penicillin and needles.
Mm-hmm.
It was very difficult for them, but let me tell you something. What they did in Hamburg musically far supersedes all this, because they became a raw, funky sort of punk rock band, and they were loved. And they worked sometimes 18 hours a day. They used preludin to stay awake. And if you looked at any teenager today who did this, you'd have them arrested. And not only would you have them arrested, you would call the parents and say, what is going on here?
Yeah.
And, of course, two of them, Paul McCartney and Pete Best, their wonderful first drummer, were accused of setting a fire at a nightclub, which they didn't do. George Harrison was deported from Hamburg because he was underage. He was 17. And John Lennon escaped, even though he stole a harmonica from a store there. And so it was a bad time. They came back to Liverpool December 1960, depressed, trying to break up, couldn't figure it out. They said, we're not going anywhere. Paul took his part-time job as a truck driver. George continued his studies as an electrician's apprentice. And it got really bad. And then magic, December 27th, 1960, they go to a place called Litherland Town Hall, former church, current senior center, where they performed, and all the people started rushing the stage. And something was going on there. And by the way, the Beatles' first attraction was as a dance band. And then, of course, they wrote the music, so it all came together. But it didn't come together without a lot of craziness.
Mary, I love that in the middle of your book, I flipped right to it, there's about 10 pages of all kind of pictures of the group, including from way back when. Like, I'm looking at one, John Lennon and his mom, Julia, or there's another one of Mary McCartney, obviously, and Paul. I mean, so precious. As you have this kind of access, I mean, talk about what you were able to get to in touch with them and travel with them and get to know them, as opposed to now in 2013, where this kind of access is a thing of the
first
past.
First of all, the two surviving Beatles live in a bubble. McCartney lives in a bubble. Ringo is very secluded.
Mm-hmm.
In those days, I was the only reporter traveling them to every stop, and I am in America in 1964 and 65 from anywhere. And I got really lucky. I didn't want to go. I told my bosses, send a DJ because this band will be here in September and gone in November.
Good call, Larry.
Yeah, you didn't want to go? What?
I don't want to travel with them. Mm. I was a hard news guy. I worked for a year in St. Louis in 1963 at the old, I don't know what it is now, WIL radio.
Mm-hmm.
On Lindell Boulevard, I believe,
mm-hmm.
and across from St. Louis University. And I was a news guy. I was, you know, grew up as a street reporter. I was 21 years old. I was news director of a station in Miami. And why did I want to go with a band? And fortunately, I did, because it turned out to be one of the greatest experiences of my life. And still not as exciting as interviewing the presidents, but close. I'm just kidding. It was incredible.
Claire, it's just like when they ask you to go to Jefferson City. I don't want to go to Jefferson City. And it was the same thing for him. Oh, I don't want to go on tour with some rock
band.
You
never know what life has in store for you.
Yeah.
And never turn down an opportunity.
With them, you know, Lennon, when he first saw me, called me a round peg in a square hole. I mean, a square peg in a round hole. And he basically said to me, you are a nerd from the 1950s. And I was wearing a Robert Hall suit, for those of you old enough to remember that, which was the number one discounter in America at the time. And I was very conservative, not politically, but conservative compared to them.
Mm.
And we got along well.
How did a band from Liverpool even get a gig in Hamburg? Were there Hamburg talent agents looking around in the Tavern Club?
They got an opening. Basically, what happened was they were cleaning toilets for this guy, Alan Williams, at his coffee shop in Liverpool called the Jacaranda. And he gave them a few gigs here and there. Their first gig was for a woman named Janet the Stripper. They played backup music for a stripper.
Uh-huh.
And when Mimi, the aunt who took care of John, heard about that, she went through the roof, but she couldn't stop him. And suddenly a group called Roy Storm and the Hurricanes, whose drummer was Ringo Starr, decided to forget Hamburg and go to a summer camp called Butlins, which was very popular. It's where families went on vacation every summer, post-war families. And Rory eventually went to Hamburg, but that was a little opening for them. And they got this gig, and they played there for 3 months, and then they ungloriously left there. And eventually, they came back. They came back for Horst Foscher, the convicted killer I talked about.
Yeah.
Who was then the bouncer at the Star Club, and eventually the manager there. And they returned to Hamburg 5 times in their career, and every time they came back, they were better. You see, I'll tell you something about the Beatles. whether it was the old Busch Stadium in 1966 or Chicago at the Amphitheater in 1964, or Comiskey Park in Chicago or Kansas City in 1964, and all the St. Louis radio stations came to Kansas City, by the way, took all their listeners there by plane. No matter where it was, when you listened to the Beatles on stage, when you could hear them, they sounded exactly the same as on the record. So basically, they were an incredible group. And I saw 72 concerts. I probably saw more Beatles concerts than anybody but the Beatles themselves or the kids in Hamburg who went to see them at the Cavern.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically, they were really good. They were just a great band. And they were a great band before they became a famous band. And all of them contributed, not just John Lennon, but Paul McCartney, George Harrison, who was sublimated, pushed into the background by the others, Ringo and Pete Best, their first drummer. And his story in this book is one that's my favorite story.
Yeah, it's a great story.
With all of your experience with the band, can you even narrow down a favorite song? Or is that kind of a loaded question?
I didn't hear the last part.
Can you narrow down a favorite song?
Well, I have several. The one that you played is one of my top fives. I Saw Her Standing There.
Uh-huh.
Because it's not listed on the all-time greats of Beatles songs. But it sort of represents the early era, the hard rock era. She was just 17, you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
I was at a White House event where McCartney was being honored, and Jerry Seinfeld came up and said, she was just 17, you know what I mean. What did you mean, Paul? And it was just a great rock song, great dance song. I love that one. I absolutely love Across the Universe, which is not considered one of their favorite songs. A Day in the Life, which is almost that of a Broadway movie. I was always very, I mean, Hey Jude is everybody's favorite. It's one of my favorites, but it's not my top five. I get a really big kick out of Help because of the tune behind the tune. And I've always loved, and I don't know why, but I've always loved All My Lovin'.
Mm.
They're beautiful songs. All their songs are beautiful songs. But, you know, it's really tough. In My Life is a close number six for me because it's such a beautiful song, and everything they did was great. I mean, it's so hard to pin it down because when you think of the Beatles, you're really thinking of a extraordinary group that really changed everything forever, and all their music is just a delight to listen to. If you sit down one day and you listen to 2 or 3 hours of this stuff, you can't believe that four people created this.
This is the Big 550 KTRS, talking with Larry Kane, Beatles historian. His new book is called When They Were Boys, about the Beatles in their pre-America years, when they were starting to get big in England and even before that. Take me back to that place in England, I mean that mental place, I guess. They had a manager by the name of Brian Epstein, who was Jewish. These guys were playing music by Chuck Berry and other African-American musicians. At a time when England was a kind of prejudicial place, wasn't it? Did they ever get any...
No more than America in some cases.
Did they get any flack for that?
Well, they had a lot. They did not get any flack, but they got a lot of shocked faces. First of all, I'm not going to get into this here, but members of the family, their families, were very upset that they picked Brian Epstein as their manager because he was Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
What they didn't know at the time was that he was gay. And they never even used that word then. The word was homosexual.
Right.
And in England in the 1960s, I think up until 1970-something, you could be arrested if you told people you were gay. I mean, arrested, convicted, put in jail. So he lived a secret life. He was a remarkable guy. He wasn't always the greatest manager, but he was a great promoter. They played the music of Little Richard and Chuck Berry. And the Isley Brothers, you know, Twist and Shout, which is often thought of as a Beatles song, was not a Beatles song.
Yep.
Although most people say it is, which because they sort of immortalized it and nobody sang it like John Lennon did. They at first played cover songs, and they were Liverpool itself was a place of tremendous division. The Catholics and the Protestants for many, many decades did not have a wonderful relationship. To this day, this is not in the current day, this is going to shock you. Imagine Busch Stadium is the main stadium there, right?
Yep.
Okay. Let's say you took Busch Stadium, which is still in downtown St. Louis, right?
Mm-hmm, yep.
And a block away, you put an exact replica of it, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And you had one stadium for the football and one stadium for the baseball, but now they have two soccer teams in Liverpool. One is called Everton. Everton represents the, from decades ago, the Catholic population. The other is the Liverpool Reds, and they represented the Protestant population. And they picture these two stadiums standing three blocks apart, built by the municipality for two teams who only play soccer there.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And now today, of course, you know, most of those religious barriers have been gapped. You know, that together they're all, there's no gap anymore. Blacks were unheard of in playing music. In fact, it was the Beatles, in their teenage wisdom, who helped a group called Joe Anker and the Chants, C-H-A-N-T-S, an a cappella group, a doo-wop kind of group, get their start in the cavern. Having a black group inside the cavern was unheard of. And the prejudice against blacks in that part of England was pretty amazing.
Mm.
So, I mean, it was a difficult time post-war, a lot of hatred toward Germany, a lot of anti-Semitism, a lot of anti-Catholicism, a lot of, tension between Protestants and Catholics. And they just sort of overcame all of it and just went on and decided, let's just do it. But they did not grow up without prejudice in their minds and hearts. And they really, when you think about it, they really overcame it. Both Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr are currently married to Jewish women.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul McCartney's been married to two. It's just an amazing life they had. And certainly the guys were, you know, outlived the prejudice that they may have grown up with.
Larry, what was your game plan when you were sitting down to write this book? Clearly, you could talk about it for days. I mean, how did you prioritize and how did you figure out what stories, what behind-the-scenes look that you wanted to share with your readers?
First of all, it's very hard because there are a lot of liars. Okay? History is sometimes shaped by people who distort the truth. So what I've done in this book, as Paul knows, is basically tried to let people decide for themselves with a little bit of an edge on my part. So you get these stories and you try to figure it out. Was Pete Best pushed out of the band? Yes. Why was he pushed out of the band? Was Ringo Starr one of the luckiest people in the world? Yes, with talent. Were McCartney and Lennon always at odds, generally? What role did these behind-the-scenes people play, including Bob Wooler, this amazing DJ who just loved them? He called them, this is what screams are made of, okay? He wrote an article that changed their entire picture. And unfortunately, on Paul McCartney's 21st birthday, June 18th, 1963, Bob Wooler was beaten very badly by John Lennon.
Mm.
And it was just his life was never the same after that. And so, you know, there's a lot of tragedies in this book. There's a lot of sadness about Pete Sutcliffe, one of their original members, and his bout with maybe a head injury, horrible, horrible death, cerebral hemorrhage, and his love story, which is a love story for the ages. And so, you know, the book, I just wanted to make the book palatable to the average reader who wanted to know the truth. This is not a book where you're going to find out what baby formula they ate at the age of 6 months, but you will find out all the necessary parts, and I've tried to write it in a way that makes it interesting for people.
Larry, if I may, you mentioned the behind-the-scenes people, and in our many conversations, I don't know if I've ever mentioned this to you, but about 25 years ago, I had a chance to have in the studio with me the man who was the press officer, and I know you know him. He was the press officer for both the Beatles and the Birds and other bands. A guy by the name of Derek Taylor.
Inimitable Derek Taylor.
He spent about 2 hours with me on the air one day, and what a storyteller and what a guy. And you must have known him because you must have dealt with him every day of those tours.
Out of all the people I've met in the land of the Beatles, there is no one more fascinating than Derek Taylor.
What a guy.
He wrote a book called 50 Years Adrift in an open neck shirt. The co-author is George Harrison.
Mm-hmm.
You can buy it for about $6,000.
Mm.
I wouldn't recommend it. And I'm in it about five times, where he tells stories about me, and I didn't even know it. And the reason the book is so expensive is because George's signature is on it.
Mm.
On each book, there are only 500 that were published. And he died in 1997. he is perhaps not just one of the most interesting people in the Beatles world, but one of the most interesting people I've ever met in my life. He was a reporter. He was in the military. He was suave and handsome. And he got fired after the 1964 tour, rehired after, I think, about 1967 or 68, went to Los Angeles. He brought the Byrds to Miami in 1966, and he said, "You got to hear them. They're better than the Beatles." And I said, "No way." And they were pretty good, but they weren't better than the Beatles, and he finally admitted that. And he kept going back to them all through his life, through Apple Records. In the 1980s, 90s, he helped prepare part of the Beatles anthology. He and Tony Barrow, the other press manager, Tony's still going strong in England, were amazing people. Derek Taylor alone could be a movie. Wasn't he great?
Yeah, he was one heck of a guy. Larry, I always have a pleasure talking to you, and we could go on forever, but I'm going to tell people to get the rest of these stories out of your book or your books.
It's immediately available on Amazon. It's in all bookstores.
The book is called When They Were Boys, and after you read that, you can go back and read his John Lennon biography called Lennon Revealed, and after you read that, you can go back and read about his days
with the
Beatles
on tour. By the way, a
little
note on Ticket to Ride.
Yeah.
It's now an e-book.
Ticket to Ride is an e-book.
Terrific. Yeah, it wasn't an e-book because in the time when it was published, there were no e-books. Now it's an e-book.
Before you go, a quick moment of Beatles history. On this day in 1967, Ringo married Maureen. Oh, no, he and his wife Maureen had a baby boy by name of Jason. Jason Starkey, who, of course, has gone on to be a pretty good drummer on his own. And on that same day, this song became number one in America. Of course, was All You Need Is Love.
Use that song, by the way. That was the song at my wedding.
Nice, nice. Beatles historian Larry Kane. The book, again, is called When They Were Boys, for the 50th anniversary of their coming to America. Larry, it's always a pleasure talking to you.
Thanks for coming and letting me be on the program. I appreciate it. Hello to everybody in St. Louis.
Always a pleasure. Larry Kane here on the Big 550 KTRS.